time for business and finance. Eric Bagshaw is the economics correspondent for the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, and he joins us to make sense of today's financial news. Hello.
Good evening, Patricia.
So the Federal Labor Party has made a big election announcement today. What are they proposing?
Look, they're going to plough ahead with an increase in the compulsory amount you have to pay in super, up to 12%. So that's a big jump from where we are now. And it's problematic because it's at the time when basically people's pay packets aren't really rising. There's a lot of concern about wages growth. And ultimately, some of that extra percentage increase is probably going to come out of wages. But it looks like they're insisting on going ahead because basically they don't think Australia's retirement incomes are big enough.
Okay, so just let's look at what we've got at the moment. What's the minimum contribution amount for super at the moment and how would this change it?
So we're at 9.5% right now. It's been frozen there since about 2013, 2014. And it only really went up by 0.5% over the last decade. So it's kind of been, you know, effectively frozen in time for a while. And it was always the plan from about 1993 for it to eventually get up to 12%. Chris Bowen got up this morning and made a speech saying that Labor was now going to stick to that plan, despite the coalition kind of arguing that basically people can't afford it right now.
Okay, and the coalition, what are they saying about all of this?
Well, They at the moment are sort of trying to prioritise people's pay packets. There is an argument that somehow businesses will pay people more super out of their profits, but really all the research sort of tends to suggest that ultimately wages are going to come down if you start increasing super payments. So that's the argument they're going to make, and I dare say they're probably going to keep making it right up until the next election, because of course the other side to this is that they don't want to see more money flowing to industry super funds, which are union and employer linked. So they're very wary of more money going into that sector at the time when they're facing a new, basically an election on these issues.
All right, let's move to another story. A lot of free trade deals are being signed, and the recent one being Hong Kong today. What's the significance of that particular deal?
So this one's worth about $18 billion in terms of the amount of trade that it covers. And Australia's had a relationship with Hong Kong for almost two decades now. And this one's basically just reaffirming some of those arrangements. But it's going to give a lot of data access, a lot of internet and data sharing sort of priority for Australians, and a lot of digital services and developing some of that relationship. Of course, Hong Kong is probably far more advanced in some of those services than Australia is, but there's basically an intention there to sort of advance that relationship. But the other side of it is that it's also going to take out a lot of the investor-state dispute resolution mechanisms, and that's kind of very wonky way of saying an allowance for companies to be allowed to sue governments if governments make decisions that sort of hurt their commercial interests. That's actually going to be taken, part of that is actually going to be taken out in this new agreement. And so that's kind of a big step forward in terms of some of the problems that Australia's been having recently, where the 1993 agreement with Hong Kong was used to sue Australia by Philip Morris, a tobacco company, and Australia basically ended up having to fork out about $12 million to fight that case in the courts.
And the Hong Kong deal now has the same status as Australia's deal with Indonesia. They're both signed, but yet to be ratified in the parliament. Is that likely to happen before the election, or is there any roadblocks there?
To be blunt, they've just run out of time, really. Both these deals have been done. They've been signed. All the symbolism is there and on the table. But as with all trade deals, they've got to go through a really extensive committee process. And, you know, leaving these sort of deals until the last minute before the election means there's no chance they will now get through before an election occurs. And that's kind of problematic because Labor has really been hedging their bets on where they stand on these deals. And so we're sort of starting to see that position kind of fleshed out a bit now.
Let's go overseas, although we kind of are when we're talking about free trade deals anyway, but let's talk about China, and China's President Xi Jinping has got a new signee to his Belt Road Initiative. Who is it?
Yeah, it's quite an extraordinary development, actually. Italy has signed up to the Belt and Road, at least a memorandum of understanding. So trade speak for you know, we'll do something with you at some point. But Italy has signed up, and it's the first G7 nation, certainly first European nation, to sign up for what is pretty much the world's biggest infrastructure project. So the Belt and Road Initiative is a almost multi-trillion dollar infrastructure building, airports, road, rail, right from China across, right through to the Western Hemisphere and into the Pacific. So this deal is really one for China to start providing infrastructure and building and loans to Italy. But of course, Italy is in a spot of bother at the moment. It's got a hell of a lot of debt. It's almost on the verge of bankruptcy. So it's an interesting decision there, and I think one that's going to really make a lot of their European partners really nervous.
Yeah, it's a very controversial move considering no other G7 countries endorse the Belt Road Initiative. So is as you say, is it just that they're in such, you know, financial dire straits that they're kind of desperate, if I can be blunt?
Yeah, it certainly does seem like that, and certainly a lot of other more developed, well, not rather developed, but Western banks, I think, are a bit more cautious about lending to Italy at the moment. So China's come along, and as it has done in other nations across, particularly through the Pacific, we've seen what's happened in Papua New Guinea, where China has lent huge amounts of money to build roads and highways, and likewise through other smaller island nations, and then ended up taking control of those assets, and in some cases has been accused of using them for military purposes. I don't think we're down that road yet with Italy, but it just shows that China is becoming very, very ambitious in this space and is keen to use infrastructure as really diplomatic leverage as much as it can.
We haven't got long for this, but China's president also managed to sign a deal with France. What does that involve?
Yeah, so this is not a memorandum of understanding. It's a step before that. I think they sort of call themselves trade partners. Really, this is about sharing, particularly in the airplane building industry. They're going to be sharing planes and a lot of infrastructure development in that area, as well as some more digital cooperation. But it's again, early days really there. And that's kind of much more of a conventional trade deal, sort of like the one Australia would do with China, rather than a signing on to this Belt and Road Initiative.
Eric, thanks for coming on.
Pleasure.